parts do different things. Can you train your brain to be more intuitive? Find out with Karen and Mind Abilities.
Hello, everybody out there in Para X.
Welcome, everybody. Hi, everybody. Welcome.
And we are so excited this evening. We have a great guest. But if you want to come over and join us in chat, it's www.para-x.com. Come in, and you'll see a little sign over to the right side of the chat, and it'll say Show Chat. Click on that, and you can come in and chat with us. Oh, my gosh. Fun, huh, Kath?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, let's introduce our exciting guest this evening. He has very interesting information to share with us. He is called Papa Spike, and he has a book called A Naughty Thing Called Life. Hello there, Spike.
Hello, hello, girls.
Hi, Spike. How are you?
I'm very, very well. In
good.
Freezing
over
London.
There, over there in London, the rainy London, like it is
yep.
here today.
Very wet.
Yeah. It's been raining here since last evening, so.
Yeah, I heard. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so I'm not, liking this too much, but
no.
We'll get through it.
Yeah.
We can't complain too much, you know what I mean? So no, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I was born in Belgium, and then when I was 6 years old, I moved to South Africa till I was 16. Then I went to Vancouver, Canada for 3 years. And then I went to Florida, where I finished high school in Orlando. And I lived there for about 13 years. And then I was a sprinter, 100 meters. I was the fastest white man in the world when I was 18. And I got a track scholarship to SMU in Dallas, Texas. And I went there to university to study. My ultimate dream is to be a heart surgeon, funny enough.
Wow.
And yeah, and 2-3 years into my studies, I started playing rugby again because I grew up playing rugby in South Africa, and I was playing for the U.S. national team. And and we were playing against the South African team one day, and the head coach said, Edward, you're too good to be playing here. You need to come back to South Africa. And they offered me a 10-year contract to play professionally in South Africa. So I dropped out of medical school, much to the disappointment of my parents. And now I've moved to South Africa and played professional rugby for 10 years. And playing rugby, I started because, as professional athletes do nowadays, you have to take steroids to be able to compete at that level.
Right.
And so I started taking steroids, and I did steroids for about 10 years and quite a lot of them. And then while I was playing rugby, because I was always on TV on weekends and stuff, I started getting a lot of offers from modeling agencies and Calvin Klein and Diesel and Ray-Ban to do commercials and billboards and ad campaigns for them. And so when I retired, I modeled professionally around the world for about 10 years. And mm-hmm. I was the first international model that was bald, tattooed, with a good body. So I kind of started that whole trend.
Oh,
yeah. And anyway, so I did that for about 10 years. And then I started getting into movies, doing stunt work and things. And then I got a few roles as the bad guy, of course.
Yeah, I noticed that, your information, yeah. Was that fun, though, doing that?
Yeah, I loved it. It was amazing.
How did you feel doing that as opposed to being in school, going to study to be a doctor? That had to be a big transition.
No, it was, but, I had been an athlete my whole life, from
right.
the age of 6. I was always the fastest runner and the best rugby
right.
player, and
so you had the call of the wild in you already.
Yeah, from the age of 6.
Wow.
And so anyway, so while I was in the modeling industry, after each shoot, after a movie shoot, we'd have a rap party and stuff, and that's when they started introducing the cocaine. And, I had never done a drug in my life. I didn't even drink alcohol when I was an athlete. And I got hooked on cocaine, developed a $300 a day habit for about 5-6 years. And and then I got the lead role in a TV series that was being shot in South America. And I fell in love with the lead actress, as you do. And we got married, and 3 months into the marriage, I was cooking dinner one night, and it felt like somebody stabbed me right through the heart with a huge knife.
Right.
And I called my wife. I said, call an ambulance. And she thought I was kidding, and she went back to bed.
Wow.
And then three hours later, she woke up panicking, so I wasn't in bed next to her, ran to the kitchen, found me ice cold on the floor, couldn't find a pulse on me. And she thought I was dead. She called the police saying, my husband's just died on my kitchen floor. The police rushed over and they brought an ambulance, like they always do. And they put a big adrenaline needle through my heart and got my heart going again long enough to get me into the OR, operating theater. And they saw that my aorta had exploded and split in half from my heart, went onto my legs.
Wow.
And that's... I went...
That is amazing, because remember I was talking to you yesterday about that, and I'm a nurse, so it's just unbelievable. I don't know if people know the
severity.
Yes, it's because when your aorta is even severed a little bit, like you said,
you can almost die.
Yeah, you can. Yes, you can almost say goodbye. You know.
No. It's unbelievable how I'm still here.
I know. And we have much more to tell, too. Yeah. Much more to tell. And tell everybody out there, the struggles that you had to go through just to make it through that one incident that happened.
Yeah, well, I went into a coma for about 6 weeks, and after the first week, because the main artery supplies your whole body, your arms and legs with blood, had exploded, my arms and legs lost all circulation. So they wanted to amputate both my legs. And my father, thank God, was there, and he told the surgeon, he said, you cut his legs off, pull the plug. He's been an athlete his whole life. He'll never want to be alive with no legs.
Right.
So then what they did, they cut my left leg in 8 places, and they put a bypass from my right leg to my left leg and flushed the blood through for 2-3 weeks.
Wow.
And my right leg came back to about 50-60%, but my left leg is still totally dead. And then when I came out the coma, my father was holding my hand really tight, and he had tears in his eyes. And I had never seen my father cry, and I didn't even know what had happened.
Right.
And I said to him, why are you crying, Dad? He goes, we thought we had lost you. You flatlined twice for over 10 minutes.
Wow.
I said, what? Why? How? And then I said, where's Javiera, my wife? And he goes, she's gone. I said, what do you mean she's gone? Yeah, we got a knock on our hotel door a couple nights ago, and there's a bag of clothes and a note saying, don't ever try and contact me again, and that's it.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, and I was just like,
devastated. That had to really knock you for a loop after going through what you went through and then that.
I know. Okay. And then so my parents flew me back to England, and I spent over 2.5 years in bed, paralyzed in the waist. I went from about 235 pounds of solid muscle to about 100 pounds in 6 weeks.
Wow.
And I was so weak, I couldn't lift my arms off the bed. I couldn't lift my head off the pillow. I had 24-hour nursing. And all I did was just stare at the ceiling. And it was just demoralizing.
But for the length of time that you did that, it's like, your mind, like we were talking yesterday about how you, because of your family support,
you knew in
your mind that you had that family support, and that's what kept you going.
Yeah. And my good friends, Mary from Dallas, and Mike, and Steve Roper, you know, they all came. And, you know, I just had amazing support, you know.
And that is awesome.
I'm truly blessed to have the friends I do, that's for sure.
Yes, you are. That means a lot, having that support behind
you.
Yeah,
it means everything.
Yeah.
Okay, I do have a question here in the chat room. It says, if you could ask him if he had any advice for people trying to climb back up the mountain, what advice would he give?
Just never give up, you know. And basically, you're the only person in the world that can make a difference to your life or to your situation or your dreams. You know, if you have a dream or you want to get out of a wheelchair, only you can do it. You know, it's not easy, believe you me. I mean, it took me years and years to get out of that wheelchair, but I did it, you know, just through perseverance and determination.
And you had the backing too. I mean, that's so important.
Yeah.
You were so fortunate to have that.
Yeah.
And from the time you had the incident until you started walking, how much time had passed?
About 5 years.
Five years.
Yeah, I was in a wheelchair for a few years after the 2.5 years in bed. And then when I was told I'd never walk again, I'd be brain dead, paraplegic, never father a child. And
wow.
You know, and then one day I was in Rye where my parents live in England, in the south of England. I was wheeling myself through the high street, the main road, and kids were running past me, laughing at me and throwing things at me. And I got home that night and I said to my father, I don't care what it costs, get me the best physiotherapist money can buy. I'm going to teach myself to walk. And it took me about 2 years and 4 months of 4 hours a day and most painful physiotherapy you can imagine. But I did it, you know, and now I walk with a slight limp, at least I can walk, you know. And
thank God.
I know.
Yeah. It's just been.
So from the time that you were bedridden,
okay, right,
and you had nurses, you had round-the-clock nursing, you had people coming to visit you. How were you grasping living compared to how you lived? Because you were, you know, you were always doing something. You were active.
Yeah. Well, it was a bit of a rude awakening, you know. I just knew that I'd get back, not to where I was, but I knew. Mm-hmm. I don't know, that's just me.
That mind, the mind sense of it.
The mindset.
You had that in your head that you were just going to be back to semi-normal or whatever normal is. I don't like to say that word, but back to almost what you were before.
Yeah.
And that takes a lot of mind strength to do that.
Yeah, it does, you know. And it hasn't been easy, believe you me. I mean, the last 14 years have been hell.
But, I would imagine.
You know, but now, you know, since my book's come out and doing so amazingly well, it's phenomenal. You know, I feel better than I've ever felt.
Oh, great.
You know, and I truly believe the best is yet to come for me.
Wow. What I find amazing is you went from being in bed for 2 years to a wheelchair, and I guess so you had to be in a lot of pain going through that therapy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the therapy was just, I've never been through pain like that in my life. It was just incredible.
Because when you break a leg and you don't use your leg for 6 months and you go for therapy, it's very painful.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't imagine 2 years and then semi-moving and now trying to use every muscle in the body again.
Yeah. It's not easy.
And having no strength at all, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was so weak.
I have another question from the chat room from Doug. He says, How did it change your life, and would you have done anything different? And I would think before it all happened.
I've had the most amazing life, and I have absolutely no regrets. My only regret was doing the drugs, you know, and because people don't realize how deadly they are and how fatal they can be. You know, I've lost many friends to drugs, and I know a lot of people who have lost family members to drugs, and it's just, especially cocaine, you know, it's just such an evil drug, you know.
Wow, yeah, it's not only just for the person using it, but it takes down families as well.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and you end up stealing. I mean, I had a Rolex, a $5,000 Rolex that I gave for 1 gram one night. That's how bad it was.
That's a bad addiction.
Yeah, you know, and I went back the next morning, and thank God the dealer knew me. He said, Spike, you know, don't worry, I saved your watch. I was like, thank you. You know what I mean?
I have someone who's trying to say hello to you out here in chat. It's
right.
Kimmy J. Kimmy J. Hello, from Lorraine.
Yep.
Tell her, give her a shout out there.
Hello, hello.
I said, you're awesome. And she said, I know. And I said, yes, he is.
there are also a few people want to know what the name of the book is. So if you would please.
Yeah, give us some websites. Yeah.
Well, the book is called A Naughty Thing Called Life. Quite an appropriate title. By Papa Spike. And I've got a blog website for it on www.papaspyk.com. So just log in there and you can order the book on there if you're in America or anywhere in the world or in England. And you can read about my story on there and see a bunch of photographs, my modeling in rugby days and my beautiful daughter Angelina.
Your daughter. She is a doll, your daughter. I saw her picture.
She is.
You guys will have to check that website out. Oh, my gosh. The story and the pictures. And it's just unbelievable. Yeah. And so it really hasn't been that long since you've kind of been, like, back to where you were before, has it?
No, it's only been a couple months. I mean, in the last 2 years, in 2009, my aorta split again in half, but didn't split open, thank God, otherwise I wouldn't be here. It split into two different tunnels, and the left-hand side started getting an aneurysm that grew to be the size of my kidneys. Mm-hmm. And the surgeon gave me like 5% chance of surviving this operation, and it was an 8-hour operation scheduled. It took him 13 and a half hours, and they end up replacing my entire aorta from my heart all the way down to my legs, halfway down my legs, 3 feet's mm-hmm. worth. And I came out of that all right. And then a year later, I was in Florida for Christmas and visiting my brother and Nicholas. And Christmas Eve, I had a seizure at 3 a.m. in the morning. And I was rushed to a hospital, and apparently my heart had rejected the plastic aorta. So I had to go back in for surgery, and they put a mechanical heart valve in there.
Wow.
And so that took another 6 months of recuperation and bedridden. And then after that surgery, my surgeon said to me, Edward, now you're bionic.
I saw that on your blog. I would say you were a little bionic.
Just... holding you together. There's another question from chat. Someone wants to know, at what moment did you feel that you had another chance?
As soon as I opened my eyes and I realized what had happened, because I had tubes coming out of everywhere, and I couldn't even talk for quite a while during those 2 years in bed. I learned to talk again. It was just...
Oh, wow.
But I just knew, right as soon as I was conscious enough to comprehend what had happened, I knew I'd get better. You know, I've always been a fighter. I've always been very determined to survive, and, you know, through thick and thin, and, you know, the family I have and the support, my brothers and just my sister, you know, it's just been amazing.
I have another question. It says, do you think religion played an important part in your recovery?
I believe in God. You know, I don't go to church every Sunday, but I pray every day, and I thank the Lord for saving my life, giving me another chance. And, you know, and every day of my life I pray, but I'm not a religious fanatic or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I'm born Catholic, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the only times I've ever been to church is when I got married, really, to be, you know, or funerals. And but I do believe in God, yes, I do. Very much so.
Wow. And the last thing we talked about yesterday was, slipping my mind, Kathy. about the Kathy, help me out here. I am like lost. I lost for words. Are you there, Kath? Kathy, is everybody there?
I'm here.
Oh, okay. And we might have lost Kathy.
Maybe she's pouring herself a drink.
Maybe she is. How dare her, right?
Yeah, when it's fine.
I thought she was awful quiet. What was the last thing I think I was reading about was in 2009. And was that the time that you had the seizure? Was that the time? Yeah.
At Christmas Eve.
Right. And did they say that what was already happening to you would have caused that? Do you know? Did they?
Well, basically, you know, when I had the original in 97, the original heart attack, they replaced about 6 inches of my aorta from my heart halfway down. And then they thought it'd be all right. And then obviously it wasn't because it split again. But then when they replaced my entire aorta, my surgeon said to me, Edward, now you as healthy as any other human being, you're going to live to over 100 because my heart has always been perfect. It's always been extremely strong. It was just the plumbing, you know, the aorta and the arteries that left my heart that took the strain from all the drugs I took.
Mm-hmm. And Kathy, wow. Are you back?
I'm back.
Okay, all right. Sorry about that. I was sitting That's here talking, okay. And I was like, oh, she's gone. That's okay, though. I have another question here in chat. Does he recall any near-death experiences at any time? Good question.
Yeah, people always ask me that. And the funny thing is, I don't know if it's because I was in a coma or what, but I don't remember what happened. I remember cooking dinner and then feeling that horrible pain through my heart and collapsing on the floor. That's the last thing I remember, and then waking up. But about 6-7 years ago, like I told you last night, I went through I got really low again, and I just thought, you know, why? What's the point of being here? You know, I was in a wheelchair and all that. Right. And I started doing coke again, quite a lot of it. And then one night I was flying as high as a kite, and I was watching the TV in the corner of my room, and everything froze. For about 2 to 3 hours, everything froze. I got up, I went to the toilet, I went to the kitchen, made myself some coffee, went outside for a cigarette, came back, and all I could see is the frozen picture on the TV screen in the corner of my room and my cat sitting on the edge of my bed for 3 hours. And I honestly thought I had died. And because no one knows what happens when you actually die, I thought the last thing you see when you die is what stays with you forever. So you don't actually like turn off, but the last vision you have, whether it's looking at a book or a computer or a TV or somebody, stays with you forever, because for 3 hours, that's how it was.
I'm sorry, Spike, to interrupt you, but did you happen to notice the time that, you know, you were, I mean, was the clock stand still also?
Yeah, everything.
Everything. Yeah,
it was 3 o'clock. It was 3:05 in the morning for about 3 hours.
Wow.
You know, and I honestly thought I had died. I honestly did for 3 hours.
We talked about that too. Remember, we were saying that we thought that was a sign for you.
Yeah.
And then that's when you realized that, you know.
Yeah, and even then I passed out after 3 hours, and I woke up in the morning, and to this day I can still see that TV screen. I know exactly what was on it and everything.
Wow.
It freaked me out, you know, and since that minute I woke up, I've never touched another drug again, and I never will again as long as I live.
I was wondering what your reaction to that was. What did that, like, how did that make you feel that this put you in this state? Right. And besides, like, just giving up the drugs, did that change your life in any way after that?
Yeah, I just started getting positive again and making a difference and, you know, getting out of that wheelchair and I got a job and I started working and running health clubs. You know, I became the best sales and marketing manager, you know, in the southeast of England, and, you know, started coaching rugby again. And it was just, it just totally turned my life around.
I was going to study. Gave you a second lease then on life. Huh?
Yeah, exactly.
So nice. Are you pretty much active now, like you were before, or is that holding you back?
Because my left leg is paralyzed, I can't exercise. So okay. I can't ride. I mean, I can walk a couple of miles, but I tend not to.
Oh, a couple of miles is pretty good.
Yeah. No, I can if I want to, but I couldn't be bothered, to be honest. I've just been working, you know. I started writing my book about 10 years ago, because after the 2.5 years in bed, my parents sent me the best psychiatrist around. And after the first session, she said to me, "Edward, the best therapy for you to do is to go home and start writing what you're feeling, your emotions, what you remember. Just write everything down." And I started doing that, and I found it so therapeutic. You know, it was incredible. And I wrote for 2-3 hours a day for about 4 or 5 years, and I showed what I was writing to my closest friend, Charles Lewis, and he said to me, "Edward, this is bloody amazing. You need to write a book. This will inspire millions. You know, what you're writing is just so heartfelt. It's so real. You know, and so." I wrote, and then I met a girl in a bar on an internet dating site. We met for a few drinks, and I got pretty drunk and woke up in a bed naked. And I fathered Angelina.
Yay! She's so beautiful. I know you're proud of her too.
She's a doll. Yeah.
Well, you know what, guys? I think we'll take a little break. And if you guys have questions out there, there is a call-in number. It's 978-384-0969. It's right at the bottom where you type in the chat. And also, if you want a private chat, either myself, Karen, or Kathy, we'll get those questions out to Spike. But we're going to go ahead and take a little break right now.
Hello.
Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. This is fun. I'm having so much fun. How about you guys?
Yep, love it.
Absolutely. I love this.
This is an absolutely outrageous story. It really is.
It is. It's unbelievable. I just want everybody to know the severity of what he has gone through. An aorta is like the primary part of your heart. And he's had something happen to it twice, right, Spike?
Three times.
Right?
I've had four open heart surgeries.
Four. See? And that's why I say he belongs here on this earth. He belongs here. He does.
Yeah.
Oh, Karen. Okay, someone's calling in.
Do we have a call? Hello?
Hello?
Who are we talking to? Hello?
This is Doug from Ghost Soldiers.
Hello, Doug. How are you?
I'm good, and how are you?
I am fine. Say hello to Spike and Kathy.
Hello, Doug.
Hi, Spike. Hi, Kathy.
Hey, Doug. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
You have a question?
Yes, I do. Good. Yes, I do. Great. My question is for you, Papa.
Yeah.
I have a friend, okay, that's battling the addiction of drugs.
Right.
What did you find the hardest about kicking it? Because what I'm trying to do is understand so I can help my friend in the best way.
Well, unfortunately, what stopped my addiction was a massive heart attack. You know, the sad thing about drugs, you know, unless you experience something dramatic like I did, it's so hard to give up, you know, unless you have a good support of friends like you obviously are to him, and just stand by him and, you know, and talk to him. To be quite honest with you, if he'd read my book, if that didn't stop his addiction, then nothing will, seriously. It's just, you know, every single person that's read it so far has said, you know, I thought I had problems. You've changed my life. You know, now I feel like, you know, you give me a new lease on life. And it's just, you know, I mean, and the reason I'm still here is, you know, all I want to do is make a difference. And if I can help and change one person's life, I'll be one happy man. You know, and I mean that from the bottom of my heart. I just want to make a difference, you know, and I'm also, I've been hired by the top rehab center in Europe. They've got branches all over Europe, and they're actually using my book as part of their therapy, and they're having their 30-year anniversary this November, and they're flying me out there to go and speak to the graduating class, and I want to go to all the schools in the area, all over the world, and speak to the students and tell them my story, and in hope that at least one of them will stop doing drugs, you know?
Exactly. I think it's all about just being there for them.
Yeah, you just have to support them, and, you know, because, I mean, drugs, it's a cure for depression, really.
Yeah.
You know?
Because I've been there.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Doug.
No, I've been there for him for the past 10 years, and it almost, you know, at one point it gets frustrating for me because I'm always there for him. His family also knows that I'm there for him, and I've been trying to help him. Right. But, you know, it almost seems like, you know, like he says, it's my problem. Let me, yeah. That he's my best friend. It actually hurts me more than he thinks it does.
Yeah.
Right.
See,
so what are your thoughts on that, Spike? Do you think that a lot of people, when you were doing what you knew was wrong back then, do you think a lot of people in your life were hurt by that?
No, well, I didn't publicize I was doing drugs, and when I was doing cocaine, mm-hmm. 90% of the time I did it on my own in my room. I hardly ever, besides the parties we went to.
Okay.
You know, that's the only time I ever did it publicly, so no one really knew what I was doing.
Okay, so you were hiding it, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, I was hiding it from everyone.
That's the thing about drugs.
So the best thing to do is just keep giving her 101%, and hopefully it'll come around.
Yeah.
I totally agree.
Yeah. Totally or even agree. Just tell him to read my blog. You know, seriously, tell him to read my blog.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, and if just, or if he even wants to call me or give me his number, I'll call him and talk to him and anything. Seriously, I mean that.
Oh, that would be great. Nice.
That would be awesome. We can get you that information, Doug, okay?
Super, I really appreciate it.
I'll order a copy of my book and I'll sign it and dedicate it to him.
Awesome.
If you give Karen your details and your address and all that and his name, I'll do that for you.
Awesome.
Oh, that would be
nice.
Great.
So nice. What a motivational thing. That's a motivational. Oh my gosh, that's so great. Very nice of you. Well, thanks for calling in, Doug.
Thank you very much, ladies, and great show.
Yes,
thank you,
Doug. Thanks.
I have another question here in chat, and it's from. I'm trying. I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right. It's Sankre, S-A-N-C-R-E.
Sankre.
She said hi, and asked him this question. He said, "She says part of. Is it a she? Part of the tone of the book at the time he wrote it was that he was still so angry at people, things in his life. Has he been able to resolve that since the book was written?"
Yes, I've got no animosity. I have no animosity towards anyone.
Good.
You know, because I mean, my whole thing was self-induced, and I'm the only person to blame. Not even my ex-wife, who left me in a coma, do I have any animosity whatsoever against her.
Right. Right.
Yeah, you know, Spike, I have a question.
Yeah.
What, I guess getting mad at everybody is your own, being mad at yourself also, not handling all these things that happened to you. But did this thing that happened to you bring you any kind of spirituality or, you know, bring out anything like that more in your life that maybe you didn't have before?
No, I mean, I've always believed in God, and I've prayed ever since I can remember every day to thank the Lord for giving me the talent that I had or whatever it was I was doing, you know. So no, it hasn't really, to be honest. I mean, I've always been very spiritual and all that, and I don't know. I mean, I think my belief in God is a lot stronger than it was.
Right, because usually people, I mean, you've been through, I mean, you almost died, you lived like, you know, just lived barely for 5 years to recuperate through all this. Yeah. Then you come out of it, and it happens again, and you're back in the hospital. And I was just wondering if there's maybe then something there's a little more that you're seeing that maybe we're not seeing, or that's getting you through all this besides just yourself, which the mind is an incredible thing, what it does for us and keeps us going like it kept you going. So I was just wondering if there was maybe anything more spiritual or anything more.
No,
like, you know, there's
to be honest with you, it's my parents and my brothers and sisters and my close friends I have in my life. You know, I've got a handful of friends that are there for me 24/7, and they're all like family to me, and you know, and they've given me the strength and support that I've always needed. You know, not one single friend of mine, ever since that I can even remember, has ever turned their back on me, ever.
That's an awesome support system.
Awesome.
You know,
that really
is. It's also because I've always been there for them, you know.
Right.
You know, even when I was earning 10 grand a day modeling and stuff, you know, I'd spend all my money on my friends, you know. And
right.
That's awesome. You know, I can tell you are a very giving, nice-hearted person when we first talked to you, and when we listened to you on the Rain Radio when you were on there before. I could just tell that, and you are so thankful that you're still here.
Definitely.
And I believe that you're supposed to be here, and there is a reason, and I think that reason is to share this book that you've written.
Yeah, yeah.
An Naughty Thing Called Life.
Yeah.
Right. And but share these experiences.
Yeah, I mean, if you read the book, I mean, there's I mean, I've had one crazy life, and it's not called the naughty thing called life for nothing.
Right. I used to be
right. Naughty boy. believe you, when you read it, you'll see what I mean. It's. I mean, there's nothing I haven't done. You know, I've been in prison for drug trafficking. Broken kneecaps and, you know, collecting money, and it's just, I've done some crazy, crazy shit in my life. And
wow.
But I have no regrets, you know. And the one thing that I've never done is intentionally harm anyone or anything.
Right.
You know mm-hmm. only myself.
Right. Well, yeah, that would be the...
You know, it's funny how the lessons in life, sometimes we have to learn the hard way, you know? Yeah, and definitely. You did like a complete 360 turnaround after all this happened to you,
yeah.
You know? But, and not an easy task.
No.
But yet, you kept yourself going and going, and that's very strong stock you had to have to do that. It's amazing. Who knows, you know, if it happened to somebody else, they may have given up, and that would have been the end of that.
Yeah.
You know, and them, but you didn't. You.
I know.
There's a bigger purpose for you.
Yeah, I think so. You know, and half of, I mean, about a third of my book, at the back of my book, all the people that read, I've had about 35,000 people visit my blog, and every single person that wrote a comment of how they felt reading it, I've put it in my book, including their names and everything. And if you read that part, it's just phenomenal, the support and the amount of people I've inspired. And, you know, it's just, it's crazy, you know.
Wow. My light just flickered. Sorry about that. So I hope I don't lose my electric. Sorry about that. And so you think what has this book really done for you? What has it done?
It's given me I've been living on benefits. I earned about $100 from the government a week to live on for the last, how many years. You know, it's going to give me a chance to be able to leave something for Angelina, number one.
Oh,
and have a better quality of life. You know, I haven't been able to leave the country for 3 years on holiday, or I haven't done anything.
Right.
You know, and I just want, you know, and I'm donating. I mean, I only make between £1.30 to £5 a book.
Wow.
You know, so I'm not making huge money, but at least if I sell thousands, I'll be able to start living again and traveling again. And my ultimate dream is to do a worldwide book tour and go to all the different places and talk to people and do book signing events.
And meet people,
And meet people of different walks of life. And
You're an inspiration, that's for sure, definitely.
And knowing how many thousands of people you've helped or, you know, inspired. Yeah. That's amazing. That's an amazing feat. It really is.
Yeah.
Oh, and my producer wants to know, do you enjoy cigars?
Cuban, yes. Only an expensive Cuban.
Oh, okay. That was funny. Oh, he says, you're his kind of guy.
Nothing like a good cigar.
Yeah.
And share with us again, and I want everyone, because I really want people to understand how important this is for you to get this word out there, the importance of that rehab that you're going to go speak at.
Yeah.
I want them to know the importance of that. Can you talk a little bit more about that and how that came about?
My brother Nicholas, who lives in Florida, is the most talented, amazing artist. If you go to my Facebook, you can see his work. He's just phenomenal. He grew up doing a lot of psychedelic drugs and marijuana and all that, and then he developed serious alcoholic problem. He started drinking enormously. To a point where one day he's walking down the street and I walked up behind him and he didn't even know who I was. Wow. And I drove him to this rehab center in Holland. And he was supposed to be there for 3 months. He ended up staying a whole year. And, and he hasn't touched a drink or a drug since. And yeah. Joanna, the woman who owns the center, has become a very close friend of my family. And she's the one that's invited me to go and do this.
Wow. You have to be so touched by that, you know?
Yeah.
To be able to help people to that extent changes their whole life around.
Yeah.
That is an amazing gift. It really is.
And it's going to benefit other people, too. It's going to really help other people.
My ultimate dream is to have a movie made of my story, because I think a movie would be the ultimate tool to get the word out and all that.
Absolutely.
I think so, too.
And so if anybody listening out there has got any connections to the movie industry or screenwriters, script writers, or movie producers.
We need to find out, huh? We need to find out, because that would be a very good movie.
And the ultimate would be Quentin Tarantino to do the movie.
I think
he would do it justice.
Now he's picking out the actors too.
he wants to be picky about it now, right?
Yeah. Hey, you're right. Gonna do it right. You have every right to go for it.
Exactly.
Oh, that's too funny.
Oh yeah. Wow. My producer is telling me here that he says, guess what? He said his cousin is a movie producer.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. So you need to talk to our producer.
Yeah,
you've talked to him a little bit, and he's very nice, and I'm sure he would maybe have some connections there for you.
Oh, fantastic.
And he said he will contact you later on Facebook.
Cool.
Yeah, that would be so excellent, wouldn't it? Wow.
Somebody even put out for Van Diesel to play your part.
Yeah.
Vin Diesel or Bruce Willis with the shaved head could pay me now.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we're staging a movie.
This will be cool. It will be cool. Yeah.
And also recently I've met the love of my life.
Great.
Oh, wonderful.
And her name is Brandy, and she lives in South Dakota.
Nice.
She's coming to see me next month, and it's just we have a connection. It's just the most beautiful thing you can imagine. And I want Angelina Jolie to play her in the movie. Angelina Jolie is not as pretty as her, but close.
There you go.
You're very nice.
He's covering all his bases.
I know. Yeah.
You've got to in this life. You only get one shot.
That's right. You're exactly right. So let's share some more of your what's your Facebook page? You have that out there?
It's under Papa Spike.
Papa Spike.
PAPASPYK. You can add me.
And you guys won't regret it. There's interesting stuff out there. And you have a regular website other than the blog?
Yeah. No, just that. And I'm on Twitter as well under Papa Spike.
Okay, there you go, guys. We have Twitter. Our site here on ParaX is very friendly with all that. It has tweets on there and follow us on Facebook and all that. So. There you go, you guys. You need to follow Papa Spike on.
And another thing, because I self-published, you know, when I finished my book, I was approached by big American publishing companies. They offered me quite a lot of money to publish my book, but they wanted to get a ghostwriter to rewrite it. And I said to them, how can somebody that you know me write what I went through better than I can?
Right.
So I turned them down, and the only way I could publish my book is to self-publish it, which cost me $2,500. But I did it, you know, and I still own all the rights. You know, I can still, I can make a movie from it. I can still get it published by a big publishing company.
Right.
But the only problem with that, all the marketing and promoting is up to me. And the only thing I have to promote my book at the moment is Facebook and my blog. Right. So if anybody has any other ideas of how I could get the word out there, I'd be grateful then.
Well, I will put the word out there, that's for sure. You know, I have this last couple of weeks, yeah. I've done that because I just think it's amazing. And I would have done the same thing you have done is self-published because,
yeah, definitely.
Like you said, who could write your story?
Can't.
They can't.
No, you're right.
There's no way.
And the big publishing company would own the rights to my story as well. So
exactly.
That's it. No way, Jose.
Good. Mm-hmm. You don't give up your life that easy.
No.
You know?
No. I'd be crazy, but I ain't stupid.
Hey, we're all crazy.
A little bit.
Yeah, a little bit. We gotta be, you know?
Yeah.
So what else would you like to share with our listeners out there?
Just read my story, you know? Even if you don't have a drug problem or anything else, you know, it's got everything in there, you know? And everybody on Earth will relate to one thing or another. It's just... I've had quite a life, believe you me. It's been a roller coaster, to say the least.
Right. And I'm so glad you came on here to share it with us.
I've enjoyed this very much.
It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable. And I plan on getting the book. And I plan on sharing your information out there because I think you're very inspirational and it's a mindset thing, I think.
Right.
You had the strength to pull through it. You had the mindset.
Yeah.
And
the family.
And the family and friends, right? But I think, you know, the more people that know about this, because the sad part about this whole thing is that this drug problem in this country and all over the world, you know, yeah, it affects everybody's life. It's not, you know, it's practically
not just the people who are doing it. It's everybody around them.
Right.
Right. Hard to get away from your friends once you have friends, when you have established friends. And it's a very difficult situation, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think so. I think
and
the
then
more people,
when you're... Go ahead,
Kat. I think more people that do see this book will help them because it'll reach so many people, you know? Because like I said, I don't think there's a family that I know that doesn't have someone that they know that has a drug problem.
No, I know. Or alcohol or anything.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, there is. It's sad.
It is sad. It is sad. And I think because of the way it is today, I mean, everybody...
Accepting.
Well, we're not dealing with what our problems really are. No. Some people, you know, and that's the way that we're all dealing with it in our own ways. But I think too, in the situation, in the atmosphere that you were in, Papa, that it made it harder. Even I think where you were, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, you were in the limelight.
Yeah.
You know, when you're in the limelight like that, it's even much more difficult to...
And the amount of movie stars around, the top movie stars that do have serious drug and alcohol problems, it's crazy.
It is.
Yeah.
People don't see it because they're out of the public, you know, they obviously do it behind closed doors, but it's scary, man. And cocaine is just, it's a killer.
Yeah. And I totally agree with you. And it's harder when you're in the limelight like that because it's like they have to share all of it with everybody, basically. Yeah.
Well, you're constantly around that element, I guess. You're constantly around it, right? Right, Spike?
Yeah.
It's like you were at a young age and very impressionable, too, you know?
Yeah.
And how old is your daughter?
She's 5 going on 25.
Aww.
She is the brightest, most beautiful little girl you can imagine. You know, she is just.
Her pictures are on Facebook, you guys.
Yeah.
She's
my very own little angel, I tell you.
And I think that was part of your staying alive, too.
Yeah, there's a picture of her on the back cover of my book as well, and inside my book.
I have one, a couple comments here in chat. It says, he was a great inspiration to me. I was struggling with some side effects of medicinal steroids, and reading his book helped me to keep going. I am going to be fine, and it really helped. When you are struggling to correct everything, sometimes you reach a point that you just want to give up. His story helped me through that.
Wow.
Isn't that nice? That.
Who's that from?
That's from me, Sancray. Sancray?
Yeah.
I think that's great. That's what I want to hear, that kind of stuff, you know? Inspirational.
That's got to make you feel good, Spike.
It sure does.
It's all positive. This is going too fast.
Yeah.
You'll come back and talk to us after you go to the rehab, right? Your speech.
Definitely.
Cool. Because I want you to have you back on. We're getting towards the end here. And I really enjoyed having you on. Do you want to share the last couple minutes we have, or last minute you have, your Facebook, Twitter, and your blog page? Go ahead.
My blog page is www.papaspyk.com. My Facebook is Papa Spike or Spike Papa. My Twitter is Papa Spike, and my MySpace is Papa Spike as well. And my book is called A Naughty Thing Called Life.
Yes.
And reading it will make you cry, it'll make you laugh, it might make you have to take a few cold showers, but it will inspire you to no end.
Well, I really want to thank you, Papa, for being here with
us. It's a pleasure.
And we enjoyed talking with you immensely. I am
and it's been my pleasure. You also. So thank you very much, and appreciate your story. And keep up good work.
Yes.
I'm trying.
And thank you again. Thank you for joining us.
And also make sure Doug sends you his information for the book.
Okay. Really? He's gonna get in touch with me.
All right,
that
perfect.
Would be awesome. Thank you.
All right, my pleasure. All right.
All right.
Night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Oh, how awesome was that?
Oh, Kathy. Incredible.
This could go on forever, huh?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Go on forever. Okay, well, let's say what we have to say here. Okay, everybody, I want to say the Shanley in New York is now not ladies only. The pajama party, it's co-ed. It's October 1st. And you need to go to my Facebook page and look for the Shanley website, sign up, and you need to come with us. It's going to be awesome. Get to investigate with Para-X.
And don't forget to stay tuned. Coming up next, Kimmy J, and her guest tonight is Kevin Lake and his book, Graves of Babes. So stay tuned for that. We'd like to say thank you to everybody for listening. Like to thank Papa Spike for talking with us and sharing his story. Yeah. Karen?
Awesome. Very awesome.
Right?
Wasn't it?
It was. Absolutely awesome.
Okay, and we are going to head out.
Have a good night, everyone. Thank you.
Good night, everyone. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening.
Appreciate it.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors. The right.